Welcome back. It is the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. We are teaching the world to persuade the world. We're teaching the good people to win, the bad people to lose. That's our game. And I am Dr. Dan French. I am the I'm American rhetorician, retired professor, also was late night comedy writer in Hollywood and founder of Rhetoric Warriors, which is really designed to try to train people to think their way through a pretty complicated modern environment and check themselves and see if maybe they've taken some wrong turns along the way, as we all do. So I do three things here. I interview comedians about their politics. I talk to conservatives and libertarians about their politics, and sometimes I try to convert them. And I do interviews with persuasion pros, especially rhetoricians, more rhetoricians on this podcast than any other podcast in the world. And I was just talking to our guest today before we started. He was our second and third interview. I interviewed him back to back. And now I think he's back at the 48th. He may even be further behind that. We'll see. But everybody, welcome back. Dan from Seattle.
Hey, thank you. I feel welcome.
You're back,
always
man.
Good to hang with you, Dan.
You're back.
Yes.
A lot has happened. Were we talking before the election, I think?
We were, yeah. I'm trying to think. It was right around, I think it was just before the election.
Yeah, that seems right. Well, let's launch into there. Why not? I mean,
yeah.
The election happened. So for people who don't know and didn't listen to the earlier podcast, Dan is somebody who was self-identified, you know, as somewhat of a liberal, had been going to peace rallies with his mom, which I thought was a great image, and had sort of transitioned into the middle and likes to sort of sit in the middle and look at all perspectives and get, I don't know if there's possible balance these days, but he likes to look at different things. But I would say you also more identify to the right now. Is that right?
I would not even say that, actually. I'm politically homeless. That's what I'll tell you. Politically homeless. So no one side, which I think most people are and may just not realize that they are as well.
Well, but explain that. What do you mean?
I mean, what are the chances that you have two options if you're looking at major political parties? What are the chances that all your personal values and ideals match up with this really long list that each side has? I mean, I think it's virtually nil, never that that's going to happen.
Zero chance. So, absolutely zero.
Yeah. So there's just too many variables. And I mean, if you think all your values match up, I think you're deluding yourself. So I guess I'm just trying to be honest and say, first of all, look at things critically and try not to be biased toward my quote side. If I do feel like I'm more on one side than another, and consider all sides and then just pick the things that seem to make sense and hold. I like to have solid beliefs that are weakly held, meaning I'm always prepared to be dissuaded from what I currently believe to be the way things work or the best way for things to work by okay. better information.
Yeah, I think most people would say that's a good stance to have cognitively in the world, that you're always open for new and more better information. You'll make some changes when you get it.
Yeah, I would hope that's what we all at least shoot for, you know, understanding we all have biases we can never overcome.
Well, sort of, but we also run into, and these are modernity questions, and since I've been doing this podcast a lot, I've talked to a lot of different perspectives, and I realize part of our issue right now is you get, you know, that, which is a good cognitive stance, I think, the idea of using your own brain to take a critical look at things and make decisions based on the quality of the information that you get. The problem is getting quality information these days, right?
Absolutely. And I think there kind of is none. You're just trying to sift through what's the currently best of the bad information.
So one of the things I find is like with the right, and I see a lot of, I, I, I subscribe across a lot of different people to sort of hear how they're talking, because I listen to the talk. I don't really listen to the content. It doesn't, that's that to me, like, that's not really the place to find, because I'm a communication person, that the content itself just gets confusing. Like, I don't know, like with the vaccines, right? And all this stuff with vaccine science right now. And I know zero about vaccine science.
Right.
All I can look at, what I do know about, is how people talk about vaccine science.
Yeah.
So when you talk about, you know, the idea that there's no good information, there are people that talk ethically and people who talk unethically.
Sure, I agree.
So who you said last time, like you like to listen to some different people. I think Scott Adams was in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, to me, he's an unethical talker.
Explain.
He mimics critical thinking.
Example.
Well, when I look at him, like he's clearly got a anti-left bias, anti-liberal bias, which is fine.
I'll disagree and give examples in a minute, but go ahead.
It's perfectly fine to have any bias. I don't mind anybody having a strong perspective on anything. That's perfectly acceptable. That's one of the ways we do things as humans. It's how we take stances. The problem is when you mimic something that sounds like you're being even-handed and you're being you're not being non-biased, but you actually are biased. That to me is an unethical talk structure.
I would agree. I'll ask for an example on that. And again, just so you know, I'm not defending Scott Adams against anything. But I just haven't encountered that with him. I've encountered some things, some issues or positions he's held that I certainly don't subscribe to. But what you're describing, I don't believe I've seen. I would like, if you have an example, I'd love to hear it.
So I don't follow him closely, but the one I remember that we had talked about before and that I kind of looked at was him going off about Trump disclaiming white supremacy.
Oh, yeah. So, and then you're saying that you feel like, is it you're saying Scott, you feel like Scott, well, you tell me, what is it you feel like Scott said?
So let's break it down from, again, a communication or a rhetoric perspective. So to disclaim white supremacy, and we talked about this a little bit, it's really easy to disclaim white supremacy.
It is. And Trump has done that 38 times on national TV.
No, see, that's the one you hit me with. Like, so that's false evidence, right? So let's look it out. Let's explain why.
Well, no, explain why it's false.
Because it's not true.
Okay, so you're saying that the compilation of videos that I can send you right now, Dan, of Trump saying he disavows white supremacy, racism, neo-Nazis, all of those groups multiple times. You're saying those didn't happen?
I'm saying those are tiny clips taken across, you know, a long range of time. And it makes it look like he did this a lot.
Well, he did it 38 times. And let me ask you, how many times should the average person need to disavow white supremacy
Until people believe your stance.
Okay. Well, you can't control that, though.
Sure you can. That's the thing about rhetoric. That's the thing about an argument. So I said it's really easy.
There's two political parties, and both have their rhetoric, and half the country believes one, and half the country believes the other. So then, that what you just said can't be true.
What do you mean?
Well, if you can convince somebody, if anyone can convince someone with the right rhetoric, then wouldn't the Republicans do that, or wouldn't the Democrats do that? When in fact, it's just pretty much an even split down the middle of the country as to who believes which side.
Kinda. Again, this is sort of what will happen is, I've talked about this before, as argument becomes a squid nest, right? So when you're pulling up evidence and you're trying to look at claims and you're trying to determine validity, it can sort of become incredibly complicated and messed up very quickly. That's the nature of logic and argument. So let's take the statement I made, which is a claim that it's very easy to disavow white supremacy.
Okay.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
And you feel like Trump has disavowed white supremacy.
Yeah, I've seen him do it 38 times.
Completely. Like, you haven't seen him do it 38 times. You saw clips that people put together that make it look like he disavowed white supremacy.
Well, he actually said those things on those occasions, and it was very clear and unambiguously disavowing of those groups.
But he was asked.
I guess directly, I don't know what else you would want.
he was asked directly during a presidential debate to disavow white supremacy and didn't do it.
So let me ask you this, and first I'll just tell you this: when he did not just come out and say, again for the 39th time, right then and there, it pissed me off. It did. It pissed me off because not for a second do I believe Trump is racist. Not one second. No more racist than all of us are, because we are all, we all have our biases. I mean, babies are racist. They prefer people around them.
Babies distinguish. They're not racist.
Well, I mean, if it comes down to skin color and that's what they're going by, I mean, there's very clear psychological research that shows that babies they have very clear reactions to people who match their parents' skin color as compared to those who don't. Now, that's all real racism is anyway. It's looking for a pattern that seems safe to you as the baby. And if it doesn't match one of those patterns, then it may seem unsafe, or at least you're uncertain about it. Now, it's really unfortunate that we carry these things into adult life. We all like to be around the familiar. And I mean, I think that's part of why racism exists, period, is simply that we as humans are pattern recognition machines. And the problem is, so our brains are always looking for patterns. Does this look like something we've seen before? If so, okay, good. What happened the last time I saw this? So that we can kind of gauge our behavior. But the problem is, we're really bad at recognizing patterns. We see patterns where they don't exist. And racism is a great example of that. Meaning, if one white person, let's say Timothy McVeigh blew up the Oklahoma City building. Now, he's a white guy and he's a Christian. Now, does that mean I should distrust white Christians? No, it's just an incidental finding. There are bad people of all skin colors, all religions, all like heights and weights and eye color and hair color. None of those incidental things have anything to do with their behavior. So that's what racism is to me, is finding a pattern and ascribing significance to it when there is none.
Right. And there's a lot of, I mean, this is, again, not my area of expertise. I don't typically talk on things content-wise for like racism, because it's not what I study, and I clearly don't understand it because it's not been part of my existence. What I am interested in, like, again, from, so divorce the content, right? Completely divorce the content from this process. So if you can, like, this is part of the things I try to train people to be able to do, is like, let's look at claims, evidence, and conclusions. So that 38 that you keep throwing at me is a quantitative piece of evidence, right? And so if I'm saying it's really easy to tell people you're not for white supremacy, but Trump did not convince half the country that he's not a white supremacist, then what else could he have done? That evidence you keep pointing out to the 38 things didn't do it. How come he didn't do something else, or what else could he have done?
Yeah, there are plenty of things he could have done. He could have just kept repeating it over and over every time someone asked it. Now, if I had to speculate, and that's all it is, I cannot read his mind, but I do know that he's a pretty strong-willed person. He appears to be, and he doesn't like being pushed around. He doesn't like being forced to do things. If I had to guess, I would think that he just got sick of answering that question, because every time it's asked, it's clearly asked in an accusatory tone, as if he is a racist and he has to prove his innocence, as opposed to him being innocent and proclaiming it loudly 38 times over the
years. Right, but it's not coming out of nowhere. Like during his rallies and stuff, he makes appeals to white supremacist-esque groups, at least.
Example.
And that's where people, that's why people ask him those questions.
Give me an example of that.
So like, if you listen to his, if you look at the text of his rallies and stuff where he's like, you know, if there's somebody there, you know, he turns the audience against them if they're criticizing him or if they're heckling and ask them to be violent.
That, which I don't agree with, by the way, but I don't recall there being any racial component to that. Do you?
Well, again, this is not something that I go into deeply about Trump's racism. It's just an example for me of evidence leading to claim, you know, leading to sort of outcome. And when I see somebody like when you see people in the media, and if I were interested in doing it, I can sit there and sort of take apart how Scott Adams does talks in ways that are unethical. I'm just using this as an example. And that idea of using this 38 as a piece of evidence, that's not evidence because it's clipped together from 38 different things. And if Trump wanted to disavow this and get everybody to accept it, pretty easy to do.
Yes, he could have just done it 138 times, right? So I'll disagree with you there. I mean, him physically in public on national TV disavowing white supremacy and neo-Nazis is evidence. In fact, it's the exact evidence that people asked for him again in the future and he gave in the past. So it has to be the highest standard of evidence because it's the one that you're saying he refused to give in, like on the debate, for example.
Right, but there's also the negative evidence, right? The evidence where he was asked things and he doesn't disavow it. So you're pulling out the positive evidence, but you're not pulling out all the evidence. So that's the problem. Like when you do type of critical thinking, is that are you being complete in the evidence that you're looking at?
So do you think Trump's racist? Or white supremacist or how?
I think Trump's racist. You know, I don't really know how to make that evaluation. What I think is Trump is opportunist, that he'll take any approach that will get him where he wants to go.
Okay. How's that different from any politician?
Oh, it's very different from lots of politicians. There are a lot of politicians who would never go, you know, and sort of pander to extreme right groups, you know, try to not go after Putin, try to not go after Proud Boys and things like this because they support him.
Proud Boys.
What's that?
He disavowed Proud Boys and he sanctioned Putin harder than Obama did.
Okay, so that's
verifiable.
Let's go off this particular tack because what's going to happen, this is what I said, it's squid nesty. So you're giving me evidence.
But we're talking about claims and we need to back the claims up. So, I mean, if he went harder against Russia than Obama did, then that's a hell of a crappy Putin puppet.
You just gave me that claim, right? So this is our second claim about Trump. So one of the claims about Trump, the left has all sorts of claims about Trump, right?
Yeah.
He's a racist. He's a Putin puppet. He's a fascist. He's all these things. And each one of those things you should look at as a claim and look at evidence,
right? Like
the full range of evidence.
Yeah.
If you want to be able to make a good decision. Now, neither you or I know anything about Trump and Putin.
Yes,
all we've got is stuff that's come.
We don't know about what's in their head. True.
All we've got is stuff that comes to us from the media.
Right.
Which we both probably agree is an unreliable source.
Absolutely.
So our evidence, all this kind of stuff is coming from an unreliable source.
Agreed.
Which makes it pretty tough to make good decisions.
Yes. So what do we have left, Dan? What do we got to rely on?
Well, I think you should rely on rhetoric.
So whoever can dress up their argument the prettiest must be right?
No, that's not rhetoric. Rhetoric is the ability to understand how an argument is being made. how persuasion is being done. So if you can look, and this is part of, well, this is the idea of the Rhetoric Warriors Project, is that if you can train people to look at their beliefs and where they're getting their information and all these things, then they can protect themselves from ending up in bad places. So like this, the idea that we, so many of us right now are making our decisions based on sort of big media information. And big media is it's a problem.
Agreed.
On all sides. It's a different kind of problem on the right than it is on the left. Although I would probably argue that there is no left-wing media. There's media, and then there's the right-wing propaganda sort of media machine that grew up, you know, from Fox News, from Rush Limbaugh all the way up through Fox News. It's a different type of thing than media.
Well, but you have to admit that what you call the media is definitely left-leaning.
No, it's humanist-leaning. It's got certain ideals for sure.
It's away from Trump-leaning.
No, it's always, the media has always been here. If you look at the history of journalism, it's always had the same values. There's always been, you know, yellow journalism and propaganda journalism and all that. But it's all had, you know, the idea at least of objectivity and fairness and truth and accuracy and all those things. That's what it's based on. That's what it was founded on.
Well, purportedly.
Well, I mean, that's what it was founded on. That is the nature of journalism.
Well, so I hate to disagree with each little point you're making, but.
No, go ahead. This is all just discussion.
So basically, Matt Taibbi came out with a great piece on exactly what you're talking about.
Who? And
Matt Taibbi. Who is a strong follow recommendation. He's a journalist from Rolling Stone. He is a progressive leaning person, just for context. But he is
how do you spell his name?
Taibbi.
Okay, keep going.
So he laid out how the reason we all felt like news was centrist and balanced back when you and I were younger. And he said the reason is because back then there were only a few major media outlets, and the owners of those outlets decided they didn't want to take one side because then they would alienate half their viewers, which is sensible. So that's why they took the quote fair and balanced approach. And we all appreciated that no one was taking sides and came to rely on them for that. But the problem is, once no one buys newspapers anymore, which is what funded news back then, real investigative journalism, etc., that stuff used to happen because the news business actually made money. Now that model does not work. No one buys magazines, no one buys newspapers. So you may have noticed over the last 5+ years that news has started looking a lot more tabloidish. Guessing you might have noticed that it's a lot of inflammatory, outrage stories that are designed to get you riled up. So if you can read the CNN first page on their website, or the Fox first page, or ABC or CBS, any of them, if you can read that page and not get pissed off about something, I'll be surprised. And the reason they do that is the same reason they do it with tabloids. It's to get people to grab the thing and buy it and then read about all the salacious details. And most of it is very light on substance, like a tabloid. And in fact, the headlines very often do not reflect anything remotely close to the truth of the story. In fact, the body of the story will often contradict the headline.
Yeah. So let's reduce back down, because we're going to get sprawled out and then we have trouble making headway on stuff that's kind of useful. So let's just stay with claim, evidence, outcome, right?
Yeah.
So you're a science guy. You're trained in science. all this stuff that's going on around vaccines right now and masks,
yep,
to me is just this big clusterfuck of poor information. While 350 million people are, at least just in this country, you know, worldwide, 7 billion people are trying to figure out what to do with a virus. So it's this massive phenomenon of bad information or good information that people can't understand. It's just like this hurricane of information.
Yes.
So talk to me about that. What's your position on all this? Because this is an area that you have expertise on. You don't have to go through somebody else.
Right. So here's my position. Trust the experts is the worst advice ever.
Really? But you're an expert for a living.
That's right.
Why should people trust you?
Well, they should trust outcomes, but not expert. Now, and without going into detail of what kind of expert I am, I'm in the healthcare field. And
you're an amazing expert. I tell people all the time what a great expert you are.
Well, thank you, Dan. And I do take pride in being really, really good at what I do. But when it comes to, and I'll say, you can say trust the experts or trust science. Those are both horrible examples of horrible advice because experts disagree. Now, what happens when
I'm going to use qualifiers on you. I want you to use qualifiers. So it's another rhetorical tool. They disagree somewhat, like with climate science. They barely disagree. There's like a tiny percentage of people that disagree on climate science. So it's not equal.
I'm not saying every expert disagree. I'm not saying it's a 50-50 split. I'm saying you can go to extremely eminently qualified experts and get two of them in front of you who have been through all the most rigorous education, and they have the same, you know, 40 years of experience in the field that you're talking about, and they will disagree 180 degrees with each other. So that is a thing. Well, they told us masks. They said, well, for God's sake, stop wearing masks. That's what the Surgeon General tweeted. For God's sake, stop wearing masks.
You mean the Surgeon General under Trump?
Yeah.
Okay.
Surgeon General. Yeah, so do you not believe the Surgeon General if he happens to work under the Trump administration?
I think Trump was really good at hiring pseudo experts.
Okay, and what do you base that on?
Listening to them.
Oh, so you as a non-expert are able to discern which are the good experts and non-experts, even though you have no expertise in that field?
Yeah, because I'm an expert rhetorician, so I can listen to the way they talk and tell you whether they're lying or not.
Okay. Well, that's a great skill to have, Dan.
It is. Everybody needs it.
But my point is, if you look at it, your unfounded claim, unbased claim, that the Surgeon General under Trump is a puppet of Trump and says only what Trump wants him to say.
No, I gave you basis for it. I did a rhetorical analysis on him.
Yeah, you said he didn't sound credible.
Yeah, according to rhetorical principles. He's
okay,
an incredible source. He also said Trump was in perfect health and that he wasn't overweight.
Well, has any presidential physician ever said that the president is in poor health and could die at any minute?
You can't, as a physician or a scientist, you can't say things in public that are untrue and then tell people, but these other things I'm saying are true. Like that is again, rhetorically, consistency is one of the things you're looking for in ethos from people. And if you get inconsistency, then they ruin their ethos.
And so unless new information has come to light, and then you would want them to be inconsistent with their previous statement because their current statement is reflecting the new information.
Yeah, that's different.
So basically we have your hunch that
it's not a hunch. General, you got to give me my expertise. I have a PhD in rhetoric.
Your expert hunch.
I have an expert. It's not a hunch. I can't let you have that term.
You have your
my analysis.
Your expert opinion.
It's not an opinion.
General,
it's an analysis.
Yes. Okay. The opinion is the result of the analysis, I assume.
No, the conclusion. You can say conclusion if you want.
Okay. Your conclusion, if that works for you, is that the Surgeon General said something to the U.S. public, all of us on Twitter, that the Surgeon General would have preferred not to have said because he knew it to be patently false.
Are you talking about when he said stop wearing masks?
Yeah.
I didn't really follow along with what he was talking about. I thought he lost.
Okay, but my only point to bring that example up is that if experts disagree with each other, and often with themselves, they'll come back and contradict themselves. Fauci has done that multiple times.
Yeah, I think with really good scientists and thinkers, you know, they qualify what they say. They say, based on the best evidence right now, this is what I would recommend.
Yeah, but if experts disagree, back to my original point, then what is expertise?
Well, you're throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You're finding a flaw.
I'm asking a question. I'm not throwing anything out. I'm asking you.
Well, you're right, but you're leading me to like what you started with, like this idea of relying on the experts is a horrible idea. And that idea is like, since there are flaws in expertise, ergo, don't rely on expertise.
Listen to it every time, but use your own critical analysis, to use your term, to help parse what the best course of action would be. And again, it's just going to be an educated guess, but we as uneducated people and inexpert in these fields, that's all we have. Because like right. You pointed out, if you have, because science is great. Science is wonderful over the long haul, but in the short term, all we know of science is what is told to us by people, and people are fallible and people are biased. And we get that from the constant, you mentioned vaccines. You get that from the constant angry disagreements from both sides of the aisle about whether vaccines are good or bad. So therefore, if we're just getting science secondhand from a person, people are fallible and biased and politically motivated on top of that, then you should not accept science as given to you as truth.
Sure. So let's go in and break this apart to your sub claims so we can do a little work on it. You start with the claim. I think we both agree, like, it'd be a stupid position to say that science is infallible or without flaw.
Right.
Absolutely. All human endeavors are riddled with flaws, and they're riddled with biases that you're aware of and that you're not aware of. And they're riddled with political motivations. Right? All these things are clearly true. Like, you can't argue against those things.
Absolutely.
So one other thing I want to pull out that is an interesting place that a lot of libertarians and individualists and believers in the self get to, which is this idea that you should be the ultimate arbiter of what you believe and accept. Do you think that's true?
I would agree with that.
Even if you're not qualified?
Yeah, because otherwise I'm handing over that responsibility to someone else who, how do I know that they have my best interests at heart?
Well, you don't know, like, that's when you get back to, so in rhetoric, ethos is the judgment of character. And we are constantly making judgments about other people's characters. And one of the things that we look at is other benefit versus self-benefit. Like, are they really out for our benefit, or are they out for their own benefit?
Right.
And that's always a ratio, because most people want some benefit from what they're doing. And most people don't want to completely take from the other side. So there's a ratio of that. So we use this judgment a lot, this ethos judgments. Like, when I send people to you because I know you're really good at what you do, I completely build up your ethos, your expertise ethos, and your morality ethos. I think you're a really good guy. I think you care about your clients. I think you care about doing really good work. I think you care about overcharging people. and, you know, taking advantage of them when they're in pain. We've talked about this multiple times, and I completely believe in that ethos.
Well, thanks, Dan. That's definitely what I'm shooting for.
Well, I think you've nailed it.
Hey, thanks, man. Good. I'm glad.
So do you think people should trust you?
Well, I mean, obviously I want to say yes, because I know all these things to be true. I know what my personal internal motivations are. I almost want people to not trust me though. So I have medical students who shadow me in my clinic. And one of them we had the other day, we had a patient and he was observing. And when the patient left, the med student asked me, he said, "I noticed she seemed a little hesitant or skeptical." He said, "How do you handle those situations?" And I said, "I love it. Those are my favorite kinds of patients, because I am all about results. I am results focused, outcomes focused. And if I can convince them to do even a fraction of the things I think they need to do to get well and get out of pain, the skeptical patient is going to prove me right. And when they prove me right themselves, rather than just trusting me or blindly handing over control of their health to me, when they prove me right themselves, it weighs more in their mind. It means more to them, especially because they came from a position of skepticism. By the way, I encourage skepticism in patients. I want in everyone. Skepticism is different than cynicism, of course, because skepticism is only believing something when there's good reason to, when we have good evidence to believe that thing. And until that time, you don't believe it. You don't necessarily believe it's not true, but you just don't actively believe the thing until there's good evidence to support it. Cynicism, on the other hand, is just distrusting everything.
You know, that's literally in my field, like the cynics. We're inheritors of the sophists. Diogenes was a cynic, and they were dedicated to truth. They weren't dark. They weren't disbelievers of everything. They were dedicated to truth. So they would not believe you unless you could prove something to them. And if they saw something they thought was true, they would say it. Like Diogenes was known for, his name was literally the dog, because he would bark stuff out at people when they walked past.
I have a feeling I would like knowing him.
Yeah, so it's interesting. It's interesting how cynicism has evolved in our culture to mean this kind of blanket negativity.
Yeah, it sounds like the original version of cynicism was really skepticism. Does that sound right? Or what we currently think of?
In a way, I mean, the skeptics are logicians, really. They're just like, show me the proof.
Yeah.
You know? And what you've got, which is a really nice structure for showing proof, is you've got specific things you tell people to do. They then get benefit from it. Ergo, they still probably try to break, and I know they do in your stuff, they try to break that chain, that connection. They're like, well, I just started feeling better. It's not your thing that did it.
Right. And you're right. I'm sure that plays a part. Some people think, well, maybe I was just going to get better anyway. And he had me do some useless stuff. And then my body got better. It was already getting better on its own. Now, here's the other thing that I help to mitigate that, though. I make very precise predictions about what I expect, what the patient's recovery is going to look like. I tell them, I mean, to the day, I'll tell them, in the next 2 days, you're going to be significant. I expect you to feel significantly better. And I say, that means significant to you, by the way, not just, well, maybe it's a little better, or no, you're going to tell me, oh, I'm definitely heading the right direction. And if you notice that, and here's some examples of what that might look like. It might look like, oh, I still hurt, but it's not as bad. Or this thing I couldn't do yesterday, I can now do today. So when they see things they couldn't do that they now can, that's a very obvious trend in the right direction. So, and I'll tell them, I expect you to be 80% better in X number of days, equipped to get the remaining progress on your own, and equipped to never need me again for this thing. So I like to be very precise in my predictions. So that goes along with the, I think it ends up lends, I mean, just my confidence in what their outcomes are going to be, I think propels them to be more likely to do the things I tell them. And then when they do them and they see everything come to pass, just as I have foretold, then they're on board.
Yeah. And you've got a very nice enclosed environment for what I would call, you know, a persuasive environment. You have a lot of good things going for you in that environment. You've got direct proof. You've got direct behaviors that you can suggest to people. You've got a long training in this. You've got massive experience in talking to people and talking in the right ways to make them feel confident in you. Like, you're incredibly good in that environment.
Yeah, you're right. It's a very controlled environment. It's a very controlled environment, which makes it easier, I think, for people to buy in, for patients to buy in, because it's just one-on-one. And plus, the reason they found me in the first place is by reputation. That's how everyone finds me. So they're coming in the first place because we have, you know, 21 years legacy of nothing but nonstop rave reviews about how patients do with us. So they're coming in primed, to use a rhetoric term. Their brain is primed already to do what I tell them. And then when they see how confident I am that they're going to get better and the timeline of it, they're much more likely to do it, as compared to or contrasted with what you and I and Joe Public does when we're watching the news and one expert says one thing and one says another, and we just throw up our hands and go, well, which one is right?
Right. Well, you don't have 20 other experts in your office giving different advice to these people.
True.
The same time, you're a single source. You've really boiled everything down. That's why I was saying it's such a nice enclosed environment, and you can do really good work for people in that environment, both persuasively and physically, you know, what you do for a living. And the problem with politics is when you move out of that environment, you move out into the world. And we started this by saying, you know, all media is a questionable source. They're not experts. The journalists aren't experts in what they're talking about. They're constricted by the format that they're talking in and by their bosses and everything else. I find a lot of times that journalists would be able to tell us things straight out that would be very helpful, but they're actually constricted by the fact that they're quote unquote journalists. Like, comedians will tell you straight out,
yeah.
You know, there's no limits on what a comedian, if they find something they think is true, they're going to tell it to you.
Up until Me Too anyway.
Well, they'll still do it. They just will phrase it better. You know, you can still do those jokes. You just have to be more artful in how you do those jokes. We have a problem when jokes go after wounded populations.
Yeah.
Which you can understand, but it's really the function of comedy, you know, to do comedy about anything. It's just how artful you're going to be. We just got very sensitive about doing comedy about victims. And so with you, like, you have this very enclosed environment where you're very successful. You've trained, you know, your mind in this format. All these sort of logical structures work really well for you there. When you move out into the world, are you applying those same things to the rest of the world?
Absolutely. I try to. That's my goal.
So here's what I was saying, like, at the beginning, this idea of, should you be the arbiter of these decisions? Uh-huh. Now, in your enclosed environment, you don't want anybody else to be the arbiter of these decisions. You want to be the person that says, hey, I know what's wrong with you. A lot of experience with this. I know how to help you. Do this. And you would like for them to accept that and do that. Because then, you know, that's your system. That's what will help them. So when you go out into the world and you start applying those same things, you're now outside of your expertise areas, you're getting bad information, you don't have direct experience with any of these things like Trump and yada, yada, yada. So don't you think it's a little dangerous to take that same expectation and take it over into politics and media and that, those kind of decisions?
Absolutely, it's dangerous. Just like it's dangerous to hand over your critical thinking to someone else and let them make your decisions for you. So really all we're talking about is risk management here. We're looking for which approach is going to get me the best outcomes. How, and best outcomes meaning the filter that I look through life at, meaning the way I understand the world and how it works. That filter makes me happy, for one thing, and it is accurate in when used to make predictions. So, and by the way, if you can use your worldview to accurately predict something that happens next, it's probably a more accurate worldview, even if it's wrong, than another worldview that doesn't predict things accurately. And by the way, if you can predict what's going to happen in the future based on a certain behavior, activity, or whatever it is you're looking at, if you can predict what's going to happen, you're going to be happier just from that, because you're going to have much fewer unpleasant surprises and you're going to make better decisions that pay off bigger for you.
Yeah, these are all good logical foundations, right? Trying to figure out cause and effect. And so we got to predict, you know, the future based on what you do now. This is all good logical thinking. The problem when you get it to a theoretical level, and this is where rhetoric comes in, really kind of like a juggernaut slamming into everybody, if you really understand it, is that in a modernity structure where you're basically living in a lot of ways in a simulated environment, which is what the media is really good at.
Yep.
You're still using these old structures of logic, but you're now dumping pseudo information into them. And so they actually become handicaps.
Well, unless you've got a good BS detector.
There's no such thing as a good enough BS detector. Like, that's what rhetoric is. Everybody looks at it like it's dressing things up or it's bullshit. But what it really does is it looks at everything that's being done and tells you how it's being dressed up or how it's being turned into bullshit. But nobody gets any training in rhetoric. But they're still trying to deconstruct rhetoric.
Okay.
So like what I'm saying, this is a fairly advanced rhetorical principle that I'm trying to get us through. This idea of logic itself is questionable these days. And for now, smart people, that's a tough one.
You're saying logic, I mean, if we're assuming the same powers of logic today versus 20 years ago, are you saying it's less useful today because the powers of propaganda are stronger?
That's partly it. There's a concept in French philosophy, a guy named Baudrillard, that's got this cool little word, simulacrum.
Yeah.
Did we talk about the simulacrum?
Uh-uh.
So Baudrillard said basically that what happens when you get this good with digital media and cable media and everything else, that you end up creating a simulacrum, a simulated environment.
Yeah.
That people spend most of their time in their heads, and it changes everything. Like, it's not just, oh, we watch the media and then we go away. We basically re-neuralize our brains, and it changes literally almost everything in the way the human being looks at the world. And you can't really escape the simulacrum. So if we accept that as a theory, you get a lot of smart people. I run into this a lot in business. Maybe we've talked about this at one point, but a lot of times when I talk to executive teams, I tell them that they all suffer from SPS, which is smart people syndrome. And if they need creative work from me, or for me to bring creatives in to do creative stuff for them, and they need to get out of the way, which is hard for smart people because they can understand what's happening and therefore they think they can get involved. But with creatives are just creative. They're not necessarily smart, and smart people will get in the way of creatives. So you got to keep smart people out of the room.
I agree. That's why I hire creatives.
Right. You know,
I don't try to do it myself.
So think of simulacrum versus logic. Those are not compatible structures. And so you're harvesting most.
I disagree, but why do you say that?
You're harvesting most. I'll just finish this. You're harvesting pretty much all your information from the simulacrum, and then you're taking it over into this, what you think is still the same logic structure, running it through your logic machine and making decisions.
Oh, you're saying garbage in, garbage out. You're saying if you're trying to make decisions based on data and the data is faulty, then you apply logic to faulty data, you're going to get faulty conclusions.
Well, what I'm saying is one step beyond that, that bad information, that simulated information will alter logic as well. Like it'll change the machine.
Oh yeah, I agree.
And you see this all over the place. You see people, yeah. I've got lots of friends that were at one point highly rational people or even highly liberal people. And you see a lot of these times when people get old, the simulacrum starts doing things to their logic system. And that's where the right wing media comes in. They come in through that open door and they start making logic changes. So suddenly people can now believe things that are patently untrue. Where if you look at logic and you apply rhetorical principles, I could lay it out and say, this is why this is untrue. And they would literally not be able to see it and probably stop the conversation with me.
Yeah, cognitive dissonance would kick in.
Yeah, well, lots of things kick in. But typically it's, this is painful, get away from me.
I'll agree with you 100%. And I'll say that applies to all media. And not just the right and not even more the right. I say equally both sides. And I will say they use different techniques from side to side slightly, but the effect is the same. Both use the fake news things, happens on Fox, happens on Breitbart, happens on CNN, happens everywhere.
So did we talk about this before? Again, one of the nice things about rhetoric is it gives you terminological tools. So that's a false equivalency.
Which?
What you just said, that it happens in all media.
So you would disagree that propaganda is being used across all media?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm a little shocked, Dan.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, propaganda is trying to convince someone to your way of thinking is my rough, inexpert definition of it.
And yeah, that's not propaganda. That's rhetoric.
So tell me your definition. Give me your definition of propaganda.
Propaganda is unethical persuasion, trying to get people to believe something.
Okay, so what makes it unethical?
Oh, things like, I mean, there's a lot, and I've got this is part of the course.
Like telling lies or falsehoods?
Deception, yeah. Like targeted deception.
So would you say, for example, CNN, do you feel like CNN ever uses propaganda?
No, I mean, CNN may be incorrect. they may make mistakes, but the difference is, you know, propaganda comes from, the whole term comes from the Nazis. And right. Even before that, the fascists in Italy. This idea of using using the media to spread patently untrue things. Patently untrue. It's not even close to being true.
Agree.
I would say a lot of CNN, and we could look at it together, may have flaws in what they're saying, but it's not patent untruth.
Now, so you know somehow that they know, let me see if I can put this more clearly. So you feel like CNN makes mistakes, but doesn't intentionally lie about things or mischaracterize things.
So intention gets us into a weird area.
Well, it's because we can't know it.
Well, yeah, but we can infer it and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But let's stay with this idea of propaganda versus sort of mistaken or incomplete or flawed reality, right? I don't think CNN is sitting there with an agenda that's tied to the Democratic Party and is tied to Democratic think tanks and tied to Democratic a Democratic wealthy class that's tied to a Democratic script writers and communication creators. And it's all in a, is all organized in a infrastructure that allows talking points to move back and forth all through
that. I agree. I don't think that either.
But Fox and the right wing media is.
You think they all get sit down in secret meetings and make agendas and plans?
It's not secret meetings at all. They have think tanks. They put out.
Oh, well, there's think tanks on both sides. So if you want to talk about think tanks being an example of that, well, they have plenty of liberal think tanks that do that.
So again, you're false equivalencing me.
Well, you just said think tanks, and I said they have those on both sides.
I know that's a false equivalency. So the right has an infrastructure for its communication.
And the left doesn't?
Huh?
And the left doesn't?
Not in the same way, no. The left doesn't have an organized infrastructure that goes all the way down to a media outlet like Fox. Like,
but
the Democrats cannot put the Democrats cannot put talking points onto CNN.
Well, that's debatable. Just like it's debatable that my personal belief is that happens on both sides across all media, not even in just including television news, but also social media, you know, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all those things. I mean, they're very clearly all taking sides. Whenever you have all of them acting within minutes or hours of each other to deplatform someone, that doesn't look like there's some coordination on some level.
Well, so let's not let ourselves sort of jump down into the everything because we'll get lost. So let's stay on this idea of false equivalency because it's a fallacy in rhetoric, and it's particularly rampant in the media, the right-wing media.
Okay, so what is the thing the right-wing media does the left-wing does not?
The right-wing makes it programmatic to do deception and to do unethical rhetoric.
What are you basing that on? Like, where could
literally, here are the unethical techniques. We can go through the right-wing media and I can show you all the things that they're doing.
Oh, you're saying they're all doing the same thing and therefore there must have been collaboration.
No, I'm saying they've attached themselves. So my whole thing is, I don't care what people believe. I don't care how they vote. Everybody's got the right to be themselves. We are in danger as a culture, as a society, as a species, when we can't tell the difference between ethical and unethical rhetoric.
Okay.
And I think you're there. I don't think you can tell the difference clearly between ethical and unethical rhetoric.
Really? That's interesting. So give me an example. Is there a news story you've heard recently that's an example of unethical rhetoric?
Well, let's take, what's around right now? I've been writing books, so I haven't really been closely following politics. Matt Gaetz is the thing right now, right?
Yeah.
So he's been accused of having sex with a 17-year-old girl, potentially paying for that sex, having parties and, you know, all sorts of debauchery.
Doing drugs. Yep.
What do you think about all that?
So I've been following it, and so far I have seen zero evidence. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm saying we're kind of deep into this thing now, a week or two. I would expect to have someone come forward or some record of something or some video or something. And so far, it's all just kind of vague, nebulous stuff. So, and again, I'm not sticking up for Matt Gaetz. I couldn't care less what happens to Matt Gaetz. I'm just saying, if I evaluate this story, so far, there's nothing meaty for me to grab onto to make a decision.
Well, it hasn't gone through the courts yet, right?
Right. So, but just like innocent until proven guilty, and as a skeptic, I'm like, well, I'm not going to believe that until I start seeing some real evidence for it. So that's where I am on that. I have no opinion about it because I have seen no evidence yet.
We'll go back to his ethos. Like, you can make judgments about people based on their ethos, whether you think it's likely he did this or not.
Okay, so give me your best argument that he did it. If from that's how you feel.
From an ethos perspective?
Yeah.
Like his character?
Well, whatever you're using as your yardstick, tell
right,
me.
Right, so that's just that one, okay? You. So there's, and when you go through the rhetoric, there's all sorts of different categories. The book that I'm writing is called 21 Colosseums of Persuasion, because essentially you'll find that there are all these different Colosseums where you can go in to do battle, right? And ethos is one of those Colosseums. So judging from his character, I don't care about evidence. I don't care about logic. That's another Colosseum, right? If I'm just using his ethos, the guy does not seem like a good person to me. Does he seem like a good person to you?
What's your yardstick for that?
You know, the things.
Gut feeling?
Huh?
Is it a gut feeling, Dan?
No, not at all. Like, I've watched him talk.
Okay, but what is it about when he talks that makes you think he's not a good guy?
I've listened to a lot of his content, too. Like, did you listen to his defense where he was saying, I will never back down. This is, you know, a plot against me, you know, all that
all
kind of
politics.
Stuff.
That's what they all say, Dan.
No, you keep false equivalencing me. You keep saying that's what they all say, and that's not
they
true.
Do.
That's not
they do.
True.
Every politician is going to deny till the last second, and only if they get caught will they give a, you know, tearful apology. Now, tell me that's not true.
That's not true. You're doing a blanket discredit of an entire occupation. They're completely honest politicians.
So did
completely good people. There are really, if you believe that, then all the way back to Lincoln and Washington and everybody else, that you're discrediting everybody. You don't think there's ever been any honest politicians?
Well, yeah, but Dan, if I, and please don't, when I say everyone, I'm sure there may have been one or two good people. I'm saying,
you don't, one or two, like that, it's a massive industry that's been around forever.
We're talking percentages. I'm talking 95% of public figures who get accused of something are going to deny it until they are forced to acknowledge the truth. And then they'll be contrite. 95% is my rough estimate of how that would break down. So yes, you could technically say there's a couple of good ones, but how many times have we seen athletes, famous athletes accused of doing steroids? Oh, no. And then, oh, yes, I did. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And how many, okay. So again, you know, this sex is, abuse. And
when I hear you where you've had a dart embedded in you from the right, I always want to pull it out. I always want to pull the thorn out and be like, dude, they got a dart in you.
Now, why is that from the right that I would approach it this way?
Because discrediting politicians, discrediting government has been a position of the right for a long time, especially since Reagan. Like, Reagan's big thing was to make people dislike government and to think that government doesn't work. That was his entire platform, and they're still doing it. And it's an inauthentic position. But so everybody just accepted it, like somehow, like that's the truth, that all governments are bad.
So if I hold a position that another group happens to hold, does that mean that I endorse that other group?
I don't know. It means that
it doesn't.
Like, did you reach that conclusion all by yourself? Is that a good conclusion? We go back to logic games, right? Just trying to figure those out.
Yeah, but we can't just automatically say that I have a thorn in me that was stuck there from the right, and that's where I got it. Because before I ever voted for Trump, I was lifelong Democrat. You know that. I mean, in every way that you can be. I mean, I'm agnostic. I'm pro-choice. I still am. So the fact that I would start to find problems with the left did not come from the right. I wasn't following the right.
Didn't it?
How did it come from the right if I'm not following the right and being indoctrinated by them?
Because like, that's kind of what I said, like in the media stream, like Fox was a whole new thing. we literally allowed another country, you know, Rupert Murdoch is Australian, to put a propaganda outlet in the middle of our networks. It was a fourth major network. If China had done that, if Iran had done that, people would have lost their minds. But because he was white and they could mimic news and that kind of stuff, they allowed that to happen. And it's filtered throughout our society. When I hear people use the right talking points as if they were God-given truths, then I'm like, okay, then that's happened somewhere along the line that you've absorbed a right-wing talking point. And it's not that they're completely illogical.
Doesn't it matter whether the talking points are accurate or not? Because that's all I care about. I don't care about where it came from. I have plenty of talking points from the left that I use. I don't care what side they came from. I care about truth. And to get the closest to truth, I have to look at both sides. In fact, there was a study that just came out a month ago where they did, it was a neurological and psychological study. And they found that people who get their news from only one source have literal brain damage. Their brains do not function as efficiently or accurately as people who get a variety of information from different sources.
And right, it makes, but you're using sense. The word information. And again, like if we look at this as unethical rhetoric, they're not giving out information. They're giving out misinformation. So you're mixing misinformation into your information.
Well, there's
like you could go to the British and do like that be your second source, your second side. You know, you could go to
Australia on the left as well.
What?
The British are going to, all the BBC and all that, they're all going to be on the left as well.
Why would you say that? It's a different country.
They are.
No, they're going to have a different perspective than Americans.
But they're all on the left side. All right, so here's a good.
The right and the left are not equivalent. Okay, that's a false equivalency. Right-wing media and the left-wing media are not the same thing.
I'm not saying they are.
Well, you'll say like, oh, they all do this. They all
do this. They have things in common, but I'm not saying they are the same because they share one quality in common. So wouldn't that be a false equivalency if you're saying? What? If you're saying that, I'm just saying, so you can have, you have these two wings of media and they share some things in common, even though they may be polar opposites in the information they deliver.
One so doesn't give information. One does not give information.
They both do. And they both give misinformation too.
No, they give mistaken information and an information. And the other one gives straight misinformation.
Wow.
That's the position. Okay.
I'm kind of surprised that you're that adamant on that, Dan.
Well, it's not that I'm that adamant on it. Like as a rhetorical scholar, I can show you why that is true. That's not just an opinion. That's okay.
Well, we can also fact check, Dan.
That's not the same thing. Like that's, I can show you that the right is using unethical rhetoric. Huh?
But if you're saying that one side is giving misinformation, the other side is giving information, we can go down each thing that is put out there by Fox News, if you like, and we can separate out the misinformation and the accurate information. It's easy to fact check that stuff.
Sure.
Relatively.
Sure.
So that means both sides give information. And I'm on top of that saying both also give misinformation as well.
No, it's planned misinformation and they mix in enough information that looks like that is news as cover so that they don't get nailed for just being straight propaganda.
I agree. And I apply that to all media.
But again, that's not the same. Like you can look at CNN. If we looked at CNN today, you could go through it and go, this is, you know, a mistake, you know, and they will have a perspective. It's a humanist perspective on things. Like everybody was like, oh, the left wing hates Trump. Trump did things that were hateable. It wasn't that they just made this up.
Right.
Like it's like he punched people. Like it didn't come out of nowhere. Like that's not what the media
does. He's an unlikable person. I agree. But if we use your yardstick to determine, oh, he's not a nice guy. And therefore, then the problem you get into is that anytime there is a baseless claim made about him or anonymously sourced, then everyone's going to use your standard. Who uses your standard will assume that he did the thing, like the Russian bounties, for example, which is a complete farce. In fact, it's just now coming out that how big of a hoax that was. Now, was that covered on your news sources about how all that was determined to be completely false about the Russian bounties for Afghan Taliban fighters given rewards to kill U.S. service members?
Well, I'm curious as to how you've reached the conclusion that it's a hoax.
Well, it came straight from Biden's Department of Justice.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't tracked that story. Let's go back to Gates, because that's one that's okay. Going on right now.
But I'm not going to let you go. We'll go to Gates. But that's a real-time example.
I'm not trying to escape. Like, if you found...
Yeah, but I want to confirm that, hey, this is a real-life example in real time of what you're describing. And I'm saying that all of this stuff was anonymously sourced.
I can't vet the quality of journalism that was done on something.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things we can do to try to discern truth and accuracy and information, all that stuff. And part of that is good training to be able to do. Going back to my big point about you're still parsing up the simulacrum and you're pulling it over into your most reliable thing that you've got in life, which is your mind and your logic. But you seem pretty convinced, which is the last step there about being convinced is an issue.
Convinced of what?
Like this thing you just said, like you sound pretty convinced that that was a hoax.
Well, if the Biden administration if his group is the one that came out and said, okay, yeah, we were wrong about that. You're saying that's not enough of a good faith admission. And I shouldn't believe them when they're admitting their own screw up. Like they would just admit a screw up for no reason.
I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. I haven't
tracked it. What does common sense tell you that?
I don't use common sense when I'm looking at a simulacrum or major national media events. That's a bad policy. Common sense is not strong enough to make sense out of these big concepts.
Hmm.
Like I had a guy on here a few weeks ago who's a guy I've known for a long time and I like a lot, but he's a libertarian and he is an engineer and pulled that out on me a couple of times where he said, hey, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck and sings like a duck or whatever, it's a duck. And I'm like, yeah, that type of logic chain is not strong enough because you're missing too many of the components to be able to draw a conclusion.
But that's the logic chain you're using for us to believe the things about Trump when we don't have real information.
No, we go into a lot of different things. Like I told you, logic gets flawed very quickly. Trying to hold it together so that you can make good conclusions becomes a real problem, especially when we're talking about these big issues.
Agreed. So all we're really doing is making the best out of the flawed information we have, which is kind of where we started. And to me, if I can predict how things are going to go, well, let's talk about what are some upcoming events that you, with your methods of ascertaining truth, and I with mine, might like for example, what do you think is going to be the verdict with the Derek Chauvin trial? So just so everyone knows, this is April 16th, and I think closing arguments happen today. The jury is probably going into deliberation today in the trial of Derek Chauvin, who is accused of several charges against in the death of George Floyd, the black man. So Dan, based on your worldview, your understanding of everything, what would you say the outcome is? How precise can you be? We'll test that.
I would have to actually sit down and do a rhetorical analysis on it in order to be able to answer that. Like, here's the thing again, that's, you know, oh my God, there's so many things impacted in that trial and that, you know, event. It's insane. That is such a complicated event. It's known worldwide right now.
Right.
Incredible. And for me to sit here and sort of throw out an opinion real quick without saying, okay, this is something I'm going to really look at, that's silly. That would not be.
Well, but you can, you're not trying to tell me what the truth is. You're just wagering. If you had to bet $5 on what would happen, that's all we're talking about. In the absence of hard information, we make educated guesses based on what we do have.
No, we make we make uneducated guesses.
We make uneducated guesses.
Which doesn't make any sense to me. Why would we do that?
It's you have to live. I assume that I'm not going to die on the road today. Otherwise, if I did assume I would, I wouldn't go to work, even though there's a very real chance I do die on the road today. So that's an example of I've weighed the risk. I've driven to work every day of my life. I've only been in one accident. So therefore, the likelihood of me dying today is pretty low. So therefore, I'm going to go ahead and risk it and go to work. So this is all I'm talking about. It's looking at the information you have and guessing what may happen next. And I can tell you what I'm going to predict.
Well, you tell me. You tell me, Dan. Dan, from Seattle.
You still have no off-the-cuff idea?
Me?
Yeah.
No, because I would... You know, part of what I do on this podcast is try to teach people how to be rhetoricians.
Right.
And a rhetorician would never make that guess unless they've done something on it.
I kind of can't believe that. Okay. So if you had to
bet. What's
because if you had to bet $5, you had no choice. There was a gun to your head. You had to.
Yeah, but what? A rhetorician is not going to let you trap them in a hypothetical.
Okay.
It's not particularly useful for me.
So therefore, if I can make an accurate guess and you can't, does that mean my method is better?
No.
Why not? Because I'm able to do something you can't do.
No, that's not. You're leading me down all sorts of these little traps to try to get me to conclusions.
Well, I'm giving you a chance to get out of the trap by making a guess so we can compare our worldviews and how accurate they are.
But that's not what you're asking. You're asking me to make a miseducated guess and then compare our.
I'm making the same miseducated guess. So we are both on the same footing here. I have not watched a single minute of that trial.
Uh-huh.
So we are the same.
What value is it to be miseducated together about something?
Well, if two uneducated people or undereducated people who have different worldviews, meaning the way they see the world and how it operates. If they have different, we look through different filters, which we clearly do, Dan.
Do we? Yet,
yeah.
Why do you say that?
Because
I'm a very logical person.
I'm not saying you're not logical. I'm saying it sounds to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, sounds to me like you would rather look at the character, the ethos of someone, and make determinations about that person based on character rather than logic and critical thinking.
No, I told you, like there are 21 Colosseums. I just move between Colosseums. I could care less which Colosseum it is. That's what a rhetorician does, is understands every one of those Colosseums.
Okay. Maybe I misunderstood what you were saying.
All I was saying is that's one way to do this. One way of making judgments is ethos.
I thought you said you preferred that was the way you would, that was your preferred way.
No,
it's okay. So for me, I don't care about what their apparent character is.
You don't care about their character?
Their apparent character.
Okay.
I care about the facts. If we're talking about, hey, did this?
But you can't know the facts. You literally can't. You literally cannot know the facts.
Cannot know all the facts, but there is information that you can look at.
And misinformation, and you can't tell the difference.
Well, how do you know? So I think
because I study this stuff. This is what I do.
I think that's the difference. I think that between you and I think that what I'm saying, compared to what you're saying, I think it's that I feel like I can sift through bullshit better with my approach than perhaps with yours. So yes,
but you're literally telling me what you just said, like literally based on what you do for a living, which you, like I've said, you're so good at it and I trust it so much and you're so informed. And you're saying, you know, I don't have that same credibility.
What you, Dan, in my stuff,
like, which is studying public talk and persuasion.
No, no, not at all. Not credibility, not at all. Let me see. Maybe I said that. Maybe I can say that more clearly.
That you're just as qualified as I am to make this judgment about public talk and truth.
No. I'm saying what really matters for the average Joe who's trying to parse out who's trying to approach an accurate picture of the way the world is.
Yes, which we would all love to have, right?
Right. We want
please give us that.
We want as close, and it's never going to be 100%, but we're just trying to get as close to an accurate picture of the world as we can, even though we have all this, these variables and this misinformation and these competing experts, etc. So therefore, the system that gets us there, or I should say, the best system for achieving that has to be the most predictive.
Yeah, I mean, logically, that's probably true, that the system that's most accurate most often is probably the best system.
Right. And all I'm wanting to do with our prediction scenario is to have a fun little professional competition, which is not scientific at all, by the way, just to see how our different viewpoints, how close they get us to truth.
Right.
We find out the answer.
But you're asking me to do something I'm not prepared for.
And neither am I. That's the whole point.
And what's your prediction?
Well, okay. I just want to confirm that you don't think that there is nothing you can say to this before I give you mine.
What do you mean? Nothing I can say.
So you're gonna have a non-entry into this competition. Is that right?
Well, within the limits of what you're asking for, like a prediction about that trial?
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, for example, do you think there are going to be riots after the trial? Just for example.
I'll give you, again, I'm not trying to be evasive. Like, that's not what I do.
I know.
Like, I try to, evasion is an unethical rhetoric technique, and I don't do it.
I agree.
I will give you accurate, truthful, honest, transparent answers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, I've never doubted that for a second.
Yeah. So I would say it's probably likely there are going to be riots.
Okay.
Incredibly, you know, enraging topic and, you know, so much energy built up about it. There's probably going to be riots.
Okay. I would agree. Even no matter what the outcome of the verdict.
Yeah. There's no way to punish him enough. Right.
Now, I'm also going to say, on top of that, that I'm probably about 75% confident that he is not going to be convicted of murder.
Okay.
So, that's what I'll give you there. Now, what about Matt Gaetz? Like,
Let's finish Chauvin. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you. You give him 75%. I'm not, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to give a percentage to that. That's clearly one possibility. You know, there's lots of things legally and technically about what he can be convicted of based on the law that they were operating under for police. So there's all sorts of slippage in that.
Sure.
You know, are they going to make this decision based on worry about what's going to happen afterwards?
All right.
Yada, yada, yada. There's so many things going on in that.
How afraid are the jury members of retribution if they do let him go, right?
Yeah, or the other way around, you know, if they convict him.
I just don't see there'd be any real risk there. You mean from the police?
Oh, or from police, who? White supremacists, you know, anybody like
that. That shit's not going to happen.
What?
Yeah, I'll predict that. That will never happen. there will never be any attacks on the jury by white supremacists or any right-leaning people for convicting him. That's what I'll predict. I think this whole white supremacist thing, it's like there's one under every bush. I just don't see them anywhere. I mean, who's a white supremacist? I don't.
All right. So I'll give you this. That could be a straw man, which is also a fallacy, where you construct a boogeyman for everybody to, you know, blame or be scared of.
The mythical white supremacist?
Mythical everything. They're all over the place. Again, it's a fallacy technique, and unethical rhetoricians use it a lot.
I agree.
So let's finish. We've been talking for an hour and a half. I don't want to keep you all day. Yeah. So it was super fun talking to you, by the way. I always enjoy it. I think my evaluation, again, as if I were diagnosing you as a professional in my profession, if you were coming into my organized environment, and I'm not saying you're asking for this and this isn't a big deal, but I would say, yeah, you're a logical person, smart person, and that's dangerous these days because you're feeding it with the simulacrum. That's the one danger I see.
Yeah. If that's true, I just don't see how that, I'm not saying that could never be true. I respectfully disagree and feel like I have a, because I consume news from both sources, left and right, if we can just call it that, I'm getting the nuggets of truth or of actual things that happen. So both sides will accurately call out the other side on their BS. When they screw up, both sides will accurately call out the other side, and they will never call out their own side. That is also true. And when I say always and never, it's 90-95% of the time is what I'm saying. Not that there are a few exceptions here and there. So Fox News will always call out the left on everything the left does. They will not miss anything the left does. The left, CNN, New York Times, will always call out the right, and they will never miss anything the right does, and they will never call out their own side. For example, did you see the Project Veritas video about the CNN expose?
So this is my thing. Like, and again, I just want to finish because I don't want to hold you up all day, and we can barrel off into a million different avenues. That is a piece of right-wing media propaganda, okay? And you're using it as if it's information and good proof. So when I talk about, when I see what you're doing from a professional perspective, really smart guy, good guy, using the simulacrum, and I think you're losing the ability to distinguish between information and misinformation, regular talk and propaganda.
So give me one example of something I think is information that you think is misinformation.
The fact that you just picked Project Veritas and wanted to tell me about the video of it, like almost everybody I know that's gone over into a right-wing/libertarian perspective on the world has reposted that video.
Right. Yeah. Again, the right will always call out the left, just like
I said. That's not what I'm talking about. That is handed down. Project Veritas is absolutely a propaganda outlet.
Okay. Like, so nothing they say is true or happens?
Not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's propaganda.
Well, if it happened and it's true, then why should I care where it came from?
It's propaganda.
Well, of course it's propaganda. They're airing it on the right to discredit the left. That does not make it untrue, though.
It does. It makes it propaganda.
Well, who cares if it's propaganda? They're both using it.
No, you keep false equivalencing me. Propaganda is propaganda is propaganda. And if you start to see it as having value and truth, that's going to be a problem.
Even if it actually happens?
It doesn't matter. Like propaganda takes, that's one of its things. So it takes, it matter. Propaganda takes truth and turns it into propaganda. That's what it does.
So are you saying that the reason it's propaganda is because the right is carrying it?
A lot of reasons. I mean, the fact that it's organized to discredit somebody in this kind of sneaky way, you know, the fact that this guy who does this stuff is not a journalist, he's not an expert in any way. The fact that he, you know, all these things that if you understood propaganda, if you studied propaganda as deeply as you study what you do for a living, you would understand what I'm talking about. But you talk about propaganda and you bring these things up and you don't know anything about them.
So it sounds to me like you're discrediting the source and therefore disregarding the actual information.
No, I'm just saying it's propaganda.
Yes, you're saying it's propaganda and therefore discrediting the information.
Well, if I don't like propaganda, then I'm not going to accept that as something. Well,
advertising
is
propaganda.
No, advertising is not propaganda. It's advertising.
Well, I know we're going on here, but
you don't understand what propaganda is.
Well, you said you defined it as having an unethical component.
I said it has a lot of things, like, propaganda is a very specific thing, has very specific techniques, yada, yada. We could look at it and you could study it.
But the key is that they're unethical, is what you said.
I said that's one of the definitioning elements of it. It's unethical.
From politics as usual, trying to discredit your opponent.
It's very different.
But how?
Well, if you want to take a course in propaganda, Dan, you could understand.
But I mean, if it's not the unethical.
I can't go through all these things right now. It's sure. As complicated as your stuff. You know, understanding what propaganda is, being able to recognize it, because a lot of times it's very sophisticated. And right now it's being done so well because our production capacities have gotten so good. And they're funded and they're talented, it's hard to distinguish it.
Yeah, and everything you just said applies to both sides.
No, that's right there, that turn you make of false equivalency.
No, it does apply to both sides. And the example is in that video. You can see the head of programming for CNN saying the literal word propaganda. He said, yes, it is propaganda. And we're focusing on Matt Gaetz right now because Matt Gaetz is a strong person on the Republican side, and that's why we're not talking about Hunter Biden's laptop.
That guy is not the representative of the left. He's not the representative. Like,
well, I'm just talking about the news organization. He's a representative of CNN.
Look, here's the thing. Let's stay in the abstract, okay? Diving down into the concrete evidence that you're pulling out, we could sit down and we could take it apart, and I could show you from a propaganda perspective, this is why it's propaganda. Okay. And you could be like, well, what about this truth? And I'm like, yeah, there's some truths in there. That doesn't make it not propaganda. So anytime you are consuming propaganda, you are taking chances with your brain.
Yeah, understood. That was a given from the whole beginning. You and I from the beginning have been talking about how to parse out the BS. And all I'm saying is, in order to do that, you have to sample from both sides because you're not going to get the whole picture from one side.
That's an untrue statement. Okay, that's not
the
way to parse out.
One side will give you the whole picture?
That's not the way to parse out false information.
What isn't?
By looking at both sides. That, again, is something
if you're
right,
looking at one side of the position.
I mean, literally, Fox News, when it came into existence, put a fallacy out in the world about news and said, fair and balanced, get both sides. That was started with.
Yes, that is a fallacy.
There are 500 sides to every event. You're only getting two and now telling me that you've got it right. And one of them is propaganda.
No. There are 500 sides. You're never going to get all of them. But you have to make a decision based on what you have.
You don't have to make a decision based on what you have.
So you could never vote.
No, you can vote. So
but
you
that's
think
making
like
a decision. So that's making a decision.
This is why when you look back and you say ethos is a simpler way of making decisions, and maybe in this kind of environment, it's a better way. So is Joe Biden a better person than Donald Trump?
No.
Straight up.
Yeah.
A better person. Biden goes to church. He's been married a long time. God. He's got grandkids that he loves. A lot of people love him.
Trump does all those things.
Trump has been married four times.
He has
all these things.
That love him. He goes to church. I mean,
You're dropping the bad stuff out of Trump.
Well, you're just making the same thing with Biden.
No. The point is this: that you're a smart guy. And I'm going to leave you with this one because I want you to think about it. You're a smart guy. You use logic and all this other stuff. You're feeding it with the simulacrum.
And propaganda. And dangerous. Don't forget that.
Huh?
And I'm also feeding it with propaganda.
Yeah. And truth.
Yeah.
Now that's just a claim. That's a diagnosis that I made. Like if you come to me at the rhetorician shack, if I just open up a new rhetoric clinic and you're like, yeah, you know, I'm having trouble with this. And I'd be like, okay, I'm going to tell you a few things and I want you to apply them. And I think you're going to get better in 3 days.
Oh, so it'd be cut out Fox and cut out. It would be a steady diet of CNN and New York Times.
That's not what I said. Is it?
No, I'm asking.
I would tell you the first thing you said is absolutely right. Quit watching any right-wing media.
I don't watch Fox.
What else do you watch?
I don't watch any news station.
Okay. Well, quit auditing any right-wing sites.
Oh. That's crazy to me that you can just, that's basically racism, but for news.
It's a rhetorician telling you. You just asked me what my diagnosis would be. My prognosis for you is that's one thing I tell people all the time. Quit watching anything that comes from the right wing because it's propaganda.
So consume less information.
No, you can expand to other things.
But if all the other things agree with each other, then that's not more
information. They don't agree with each other. There's tons of diverse perspectives on, you know, the regular media and writers and people who study this stuff. Go to academics. Start reading academics about this stuff.
Yeah, they're all on the left.
No, they're not.
Name one who's on the right.
What are you talking about? An academic is not a political position.
Oh, of course they are. They're humans. They're political.
Oh my God. So you are.
Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're moving from one, you know, truth, which is everybody's a human being. We all have bias, everything else, to discredit academics.
No, I'm not discrediting them. I'm saying I listen to them too. I'm just saying that is not a sampling of the kind of information one would want from an academic, because they tend to be all on one side of the boat.
Who do you think is the loopiest area in med?
Loopiest what?
In medical stuff. Who works in your same area, you know, and would, you know, do you think like, oh, let's pick a witch doctor, somebody who shakes bones and dances around somebody. Do you think everybody who comes to you should also go to them and get both opinions?
No. And that's crazy, not what I do with news. That's not what I do with news.
It is what you do with news. Like literally the witch doctors, shamans and everything else are the right wing. That is propaganda. That's what it is. This is what I study. This is what I do. This is my expertise.
That you judge the vehicle more with more, you give it the vehicle more validity than whether the thing that said is true or not. That is shocking to me.
You don't understand what you're talking about on truth. Like if something is coming through a propaganda structure, you can find some truth in it.
Yes.
But you're going to find this massive area of influence.
Yes.
That you do not know how to protect yourself from.
How do you know?
Because this is what I study. You don't know how to protect yourself.
I don't know.
Can't even define propaganda.
Well, I asked you for your definition.
I told you one of the things is unethical rhetoric, which is non-transparency. You know, there's lots of things that are unethical, but non-transparency, dishonest rhetoric, you know, all these things. And then you want to just pull that over and go, well, it also happens on the left. And I'm like,
the Project Veritas video demonstrates that as clearly as you just said it. So, and that's on the left. So I'm just saying, I'm not saying it happens more on one side than the other. I'm just saying it does. And it's demonstrable today by watching that video.
That video is not a piece of news.
What does that even mean?
It is a hidden camera hijacking.
What does that matter?
That's not news.
Who cares?
That's not
who
news.
Who cares what the vehicle is, Dan?
If because it's really dishonest. Happened, it's dishonestly done.
So, but it's true. That's the thing you never want to get to. Is that
means it's it was unethically gathered. It's dishonestly done.
So you would rather that we, the public, don't know that CNN is actively propagandizing us, and you would rather us not know that if we get that information in a shady way. It's better for the public to be ignorant of the fact they are being propagandized by CNN.
They're not being propagandized by CNN.
He said it. He said
it. It's not
it
propaganda. He doesn't understand what propaganda is if he's saying God. That. Okay, so let's finish. Let's finish. So this is just my diagnosis. Smart guy, simulacrum, that's dangerous. I want you to think about that one. You don't have to accept it, but I at least want you to have it as a structure in your head.
Absolutely. And awesome. And I'll tell you this, that has been my whole framework for how I approach things anyway, which is I am aware of the existence of propaganda and deceptive practices. In fact, I've brought up numerous examples with you, which you don't want to talk about, like the Fine People hoax and the drinking bleach hoax and the Covington Kids hoax and the Russian bounties hoax.
That word hoax is a...
I know it comes from the right.
Right wing. It's a right wing word.
Yes.
If you're using it with me, you got it from the right.
I did, because the left won't talk about it.
That is not true. The left talks about all those events.
So the left has come out and the left media has come out and admitted that they were completely wrong, and they intentionally trimmed those news clips to make them appear the exact opposite of what actually happened.
All right. So what's the structure I want you to take away with?
Simulacrum, smart guy, bad.
Just dangerous. It's just dangerous.
That's dangerous. All. Okay. Dangerous.
Not bad. Just dangerous. All right, man, this has been super fun. Like, we're almost at 2 hours now. So I will circle back around. You found more hoaxes.
Yeah. You know. So promise me this. The next time we'll go into one in detail, and just one, you can pick it if you want. And I would like for you to educate me as to how to determine whether something is worth considering as truth or not.
I would love to do that. I'll teach you some stuff about propaganda.
So pick me a hoax, up to you. We'll go through it. Or a piece of misleading news. How's that? A piece of misleading news.
Sounds good. I like it.
Awesome.
Cool, man. Super fun. Once again, everybody, that's Dan from Seattle. He's always got good stuff to say. And we will keep circling around and we'll figure out all these issues for you so you can just listen to us, because we are the truth.
That's right.
All right, Dan, I'll see you, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye.